This is the Unnamed Movie Podcast, episode 4. I'm Andrew.
And I'm Douglas. Today
we'll be talking about David Fincher, going through news trailers and also reviewing new DVD release that just came out the other day, City of Embo.
Yay!
Alright, so starting it off with David Fincher.
Oh, David Fincher, love you.
Basically, the whole idea of this is that when I started the podcast, I said what I want to do is every 4 episodes, I want us to dissect the catalog of someone in film. We probably for the first few of these will want to do directors because we like to talk about directors. But eventually it will taper off into like actors, people, other producers, writers,
key grips. Yeah,
you know,
that type of
people who have the money tree and don't like it to be shaken. And today we opted to do Dave Fincher. What we'll do from this episode on, where each of us, Damien, Simon, Douglas, and I, we're all going to like nominate someone we want to talk about.
Vote Terry Gilliam!
And we're going to put up a poll. And I'll put up a poll right after the episode when we talk about someone. So, for example, on episode 4 today, when we talk about Dave Fincher, right after when I upload the episode, I'm going to put up a poll on gmanreviews.com. with all of our options, and you guys will vote, and that poll will close after a week, and then we'll just start working on going through that filmmaker's catalog so that we can talk about him in the future, in the next 4th episode, in episode 8. Hopefully I don't sound completely insane. We'll talk about the nominees for the next filmmaker's review at the end of this episode, but right now, let's get into David Fincher, and I want to start off by just listing off his movies, right? Okay. As a director, he has done, there was a short film in 1985, The Beat of the Live Drum, which I'm sure no one has seen.
That may or may not be true.
He did, in 1992, he did Alien 3 as his first feature film. Then he came back 3 years later in 1995 with Seven. Then 1997 with The Game, 1999 Fight Club, 2002 Panic Room, 2007 Zodiac, and this year, which we reviewed last week, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Right.
So, like, what are your initial thoughts on David Fincher? Like, before we even started, like, catching up on movies we hadn't seen or whatever.
Well, before I started catching up with the movies that I had either not seen or seen maybe 20 years ago and just forgotten about, the word that comes to mind is maybe awesome, you know, fabulous, spectacular, something like that. I mean, any man who can make Fight Club, he is in my top 10 directors for life always. Also, there was Seven. I love Seven. Right? But seeing as, you know, we have to be a bit more scientific about it, I went back and I watched some movies. I'd seen Seven recently, so I didn't need to do that. I went and I watched, like I said last week, I watched Panic Room, which featured Jared Leto from your favorite movie. Well, maybe not favorite movie, but he is the lead role in Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, I realized that after I watched Panic Room last night.
Yeah. By the way, I thought his performance in Panic Room was pretty decent. It was really good.
Yeah.
But to get on the subject, I watched Panic Room. I looked at... what was it I watched? Just... But yeah, so... David Fincher, what are my things? Well, he likes to move the camera around them, which is fun, but sometimes he goes overboard. For example, in Panic Room, every other second he was going through the ceiling and the wall and the window and the pipes and
Yeah, that's something that I found with him, that he loves to shift around the camera, make the scene seem so huge. And the thing about it is, when you do things like that, you have to use tons of CG to cover it up.
Yeah.
And that's something that I realized from his first movie, Alien 3. He loves the CG. I went back and I saw Alien and Aliens before I went to watch Alien 3, so I made sure I didn't like see anything out of context. only thing I have to say is the best thing about the Alien franchise previous to Fincher was the practical effects. I mean, the first one was directed by Ridley Scott, the second one by James Cameron. And James Cameron has always been the man who tapers his movies to the effects. You know, he doesn't try to force anything visually that won't work, that'll take you out of the movie, unless he knows it's fine.
Right.
And everything was practical. The alien was completely practical. But when Fincher came around, he had some of the alien shots being practical, and then most of like the ones which you didn't only see a head or a hand or a foot, and you saw the whole alien, it would be CG, and 1992 CG just... I mean, I really shouldn't rip on it, because of course, as we say, it's 1992. And it actually got a nomination in the Oscars for Best Visual Effects.
Exactly.
But so did the other two, so... Stick with the practical, I say.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you don't do that, then that is just going to die, and then nobody's going to... the CG isn't going to get better if you don't. If you don't have bad CG movies, you can't have good CG movies, because it's from the bad that you...
But I can just imagine like me watching it in 1992 going like, this looks completely awesome.
Yeah, right. That's the thing as well. At the time, I'm sure it was, you know, the latest and greatest, and it looked fabulous. So yeah, I mean, Alien 3, most people didn't like it though, I noticed.
Out of the Alien franchise, I still haven't watched Alien 4. I mean, But that movie is the weakest of the links so far.
Yeah.
And it... The story was kind of alright in that they threw Ripley in a situation, and they had an alien, and everyone had to band together and kill the alien.
Right.
But it just got more and more ridiculous as you went on. And of course, we're not flacking the movie, because I mean, we want to talk about Finch as a director, which is why I tried to point out more of the visual aspects. But the movie just didn't work. I think it's not his fault. I mean, on top of which, it's his first movie.
Yeah, true. Well, actually, I mean, maybe his first feature film, but look here, he did, you know, Madonna, The Immaculate Collection before. He must have learned a lot from that.
Three music videos. Well, all he's going to learn from that is every time I have to have a shot of Madonna looking pretty or looking... with her skirt flying up into the breeze because she's on a manhole.
Make sure she has the triangle bras on. That always works for her.
Right, so, like, Alien 3, I have to give him a bligh, because I'm sure it was a studio thing. Like, he does this, he gets to do something later. And as we see, his next...
Oh, like Guillermo del Toro with Blade, and then he decided to make... Wait.
Well, no, but you have to say, right? As people tend to say with comic book movies, the second one is always better than the first because they've set up the character.
Oh, you're assuming I think the second one is better than the first.
No, I'm talking about generally comic book movies.
Okay, sure.
Right. Iron Man 2 would probably be better because they don't have to take all the time to introduce the character.
Right.
Hulk. Even though it's not a sequel, it pretended to be one because they never bothered to spend 5 hours introducing you to the Hulk.
Yeah.
That's totally better. What else is there? The Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2 is better than Spider-Man 1.
Okay, but we need to get back to what brought us here. You're saying that Hellboy 2 is...
I'm saying... You were talking about Guillermo del Toro and his...
He said he made... Well,
he made Blade 2 so that he would be able to... The studio would let him make Hellboy.
Uh-huh.
And you complained about Hellboy. And I'm saying Hellboy 2 is better than Hellboy because... I'm a movie and it generally... And it just is.
So, for you folks wondering what that silence was about a while ago, that was me moving, you know, raising my eyebrows because... Hellboy 1, 2, and whatever subsequent sequel that Guillermo del Toro might decide to make is crap. It's awful. I don't know why people like it. I've seen so many good reviews of Hellboy 2.
It's an awesome movie.
And I just don't get it. It's not exciting. It's not fun to watch. It's not entertaining at all. It's just, you know, but anyway, back to David Fincher.
Alright, so Alien 3, I have to say it's a lame movie, but I don't particularly blame Fincher about it.
Yeah, no, you have to give directors, first of all, nobody has, you know, 100% batting average. You're going to have some bad movies, you're going to have some okay movies, and hopefully, if you're good, like I believe Fincher is, you're going to have some great movies. And Alien 3 was just one of the bad ones. And also, like you say, it's his first movie. You can't knock a man for having a bad first movie.
So moving on to his number 2, he comes back, like, 5 years later. With three years later. I just skipped the movie. 3 years later to do one of his best, Seven.
Yes, I have to agree, hands down. Seven is... it's just great. I mean, Brad Pitt, clearly it's, you know, the first introduction of David Fincher to Brad Pitt. He will work with him on very many more occasions.
Yeah, it's 3 so far, right?
Exactly. So far it's 3. I'm sure there's going to be more. Yes, Brad Pitt for David Fincher is clearly synonymous for... Okay, so yeah, Brad Pitt for David Fincher is clearly akin to Robert De Niro for Martin Scorsese at this time.
You see, I'm not sure because I don't like to say that Brad Pitt was made by Fincher.
No. I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that he likes to make movies with him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have to agree. So far to date, it's 3 movies they're done together. All of them have been great.
I wouldn't say that. 2 of them were amazing. 1 was okay.
Yeah.
Seven. And if you want to know which one I think is okay, flip back the last one.
7 was definitely one of his best movies so far. It is one of the best police films I've watched for a long time. I saw it for the first time, I think, last year. I wrote a review for it on the site.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring back the 90s article, but I've just been really lazy about it recently. I loved how they intertwined the murders. I loved how they got the partnership going between the not so much the rookie, because he doesn't play a rookie, but he plays someone who's just come into the district. I mean, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Versus Morgan Freeman, who is the veteran who's retiring at the end of the week. So you have 7 days, 7 murders.
7 deadly sins.
7 deadly sins.
Cha-ching!
And, I mean, I generally think Fincher does great with this kind of storyline where it's about serial killers or something sadistic in the world. As we say, his better movies, which are coming to, is Fight Club, which is about...
Fight Club is... Andrew, the first rule about Fight Club is you don't talk about it.
So he only did 5 movies. Or he did 6, but we can only talk about 5.
Exactly.
The 6th one is the unnamed...
Yep. The second rule of Fight Club, Andrew, is you don't talk about Fight Club.
I'd just like to say you broke rule 1 and 2 just there.
Yeah, no, so Fight Club is amazing. Fight Club is the first, and now that I think of it, probably only Fincher movie that I actually own. Bought that one way back. I love it to death. I watch it, you know, religiously. It's just... you can see the movement, the progression of his filmmaking from, say, an Aliens 3 to Fight Club. Even through Panic Room, because Panic Room was... wait, was Panic Room before?
After. It was after. Panic Room was 2002,
oh, no.
Fight Club
I'm
was 99.
So I was about to say that Panic Room showed, you know, the camera movements and the whole... over exuberance about the CGI a bit too much, and then he did well with Fight Club, but I guess it was more the other way around. Fight Club, I mean, he has a CGI in it, clearly, if you see some of the shots, but it's more subtle, it's low key, and it's just fabulous the way he puts everything together. Panic Room, I was just so upset because when, you know, he'd pan in between rooms and you'd see him go through walls like maybe every other 5 minutes, and that kind of upset me. Because it was almost as if, hey, look at what I can do every time I get the chance.
Yeah, he definitely has that feel to him where he likes to play with the camera a lot and show off about his technical skills throughout his movies. And it shows up a lot during Fight Club as well as Panic Room.
No, it does. It shows up.
I mean, Fight Club works a lot better because that's a more, what's the word? random movie because a random story because you're dealing with this guy who doesn't know what's going on, and he meets Tyler Durden, who is this this free flowing guy who starts up what we shouldn't be talking about. I won't name it because you know Brad Pitt will find out. Brad Pitt will find my address. He will hurt me and feed me to the dogs.
Or no, he doesn't feed you to the dogs, Andrew. He lets you beat him up, and then he smiles all over you.
You don't know where he's been, Andrew. You don't know where he's been.
And then I have to give him my basement to hold meetings in.
Yeah.
But yeah, but we totally skipped over another one of his awesome movies.
Which is what?
The Game. We watched this last night.
Yes, we did watch this last night, and I'm happy to say that I love it. I thought it was great. He didn't do too much of the CG stuff in that movie.
Yeah, that one was totally stripped bare.
But he still had, I noticed he likes the, he doesn't like to move the camera shakily. He likes smooth movements.
Yeah.
And he likes to, if he's going to stop, he's not going to have the camera move a little bit. It's going to be exactly still. And it's going to be some very nice angle. It's not going to be straight up.
I have to say about that movie, best moment ever.
When's that?
I'm in a fragile state right now.
Oh yes.
Michael.
When he's in the car.
He's in the car. Michael Douglas's character has gone through all of this game already, and he's sitting in his car, you know, in Chinatown or something, and some dude holds this metal plate to his neck, like threatening him and telling him he has to give up the car. He's trying to mug him. And he just reaches over, pulls out his gun, and points at the dude and says, I'm in a fragile state right now. And the dude just steps off. Like, oh my god, that was just an amazing moment in that movie.
Yes, it was. And then visually, of course, there was the one great moment when, you know, they both dropped into the garbage bin and they were coming.
Oh!
It was very nice to look at.
You know, it had the sense of, like, you didn't know what was coming, and it gave you a paranoid feeling throughout the movie, trying to figure out what is part of the game and what isn't, what's real, what's fake, how far is this game?
Yeah.
Like, is it even a game? Was it just a scam? Because that was the whole thing, right?
Yeah, that's true. And he really, he addressed that a little bit in the sense of, is this a game? Is this part of the game? Is it not part of the game? Remember when there's a part when, you know, you see this key with a logo that kind of, it's similar to something that's been shown before in the movie, and then he says, am I supposed to take that key, or did somebody just leave it there by accident? And then, you know, it turns out that somebody just left it by accident and it came back. But he does that.
I mean, it's pretty ridiculous and unbelievable, because as I said when we were watching the movie, if this ever happened in real life, number one, there'd be tons of lawsuits going around.
True.
Number two,
also, it relies on a lot of coincidence.
It relies on particularly coincidence, lots of thorough planning. Like, people, I remember a while back, were starting to pick on The Dark Knight for how thoroughly planned the Joker was, when they didn't realize that it was just him running around doing what he wants to do, and when everything failed, he was like, okay, it failed.
He wouldn't know what to do if he caught a car.
Yeah. It's thoroughly planned, like plan A, B, C through all the way to Delta Alpha. Crazy letters. And on top of which, it would require your family and friends to be amazing actors.
That, and the fact that you have to know exactly how to, you know, drop off on it.
Yeah. I wonder how they, like, hoped he would drop off in the exact correct spot.
Well, you see, Andrew.
Because they weren't even, like, watching him, if you notice, like, when it happened. They weren't watching him to make sure whether he was a little to the left or a little to the right.
Well, you know, maybe they just assumed that, seeing as he knew he was in the game, he would find his way there.
But he didn't think it was a game.
Yeah, but no, he'd find his way there. He'd, you know, jump and mid-air, look down and be like, oh, I'm not dropping in the right spot. Need to push myself over to
He'd know how to, like, shift his weight mid-air.
Exactly. He'd use his jacket as a glider and just kind of get down there in the right spot.
But the game, as well, Seven not so much. The Game was another movie where he definitely toned down his camera movements
right
a ton. Like it was, and I think it was mainly because the story didn't allow for it. It didn't allow for all these moments when he's just standing around, and he got to pan around a whole area, showing you what's going on, and then come to the character, like they did in Panic Room or in Alien 3, right?
Yeah.
He didn't allow for that because it was a lot of moving around, in that he was in a car, and then next he was in the house, and then next he was elsewhere, and he kept not knowing what was going on. So it didn't allow for it. So I like that that David Fincher understood how to change his style for a story.
Exactly. Actually, no, you're quite right. And in changing his style, he showed that he's a really good director, because, I mean, you know, you look at, say, a Tom Cruise movie, or, you know, there are certain people that you look at and you say, if you see a movie that you don't know what it is, you could say, you know, this is this guy's movie, this is that guy's movie. But with Fincher, he can actually change that so that you might not know. And that is, you know, a telltale sign of the direction. But then came the Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
No, stop.
Wait, what?
You're skipping over my favorite David Fincher movie.
What, Seven?
Zodiac. This movie came out in 07. It was the true story of the Zodiac Killer back when. And I love this movie. Once again, Fincher tones down his need for flashy cameras. And he still has a CG, but the CG is minimal, and also it fits.
When is there CG?
That's my point.
When is there CG?
That's my point. Number one, unlike 1992, the CG is good, so you can't tell. And when I looked at, because I got the director's cut DVD a month or two ago, and there's some special features where they show you how they're shooting the stuff. And for example, there's certain streets that they wanted to shoot on, but the people on the street wouldn't allow them. So they had to rebuild parts of the street.
Yeah.
And then put up huge green screens around them, and then they CG'd the scene of the street. There was this specific scene. You remember when, like, the taxi cab got killed? The taxi cab driver?
Yes, I remember when the taxi cab got killed.
The taxi cab driver.
He killed an inanimate object.
Right? He had this huge thing where the camera was right above the cab.
Mm-hmm.
And as the cab moved, the camera moved, and the cab would turn, and the camera would turn.
Yeah.
And it was a really cool shot, entirely CG.
Sweet.
Every murder in that film, all the blood was CG.
Oh, yes, I remember you told me that, because he didn't want to wait to clean up everybody in between takes or something.
Yeah, he didn't want this whole thing of, okay, that was horrible, change your clothes, clean them up, and let's do it over again.
Yeah.
So he had them acting, like saying, oh, you're being shot, and they're like falling over. And then he's like, all right, that's good, and then goes in the CG room and adds the blood. And I mean, some of the CG you can tell if you look hard enough, but because of the darkness of the film, it's not that easy to spot.
Yeah.
And the acting in the movie is
spot on. Can I tell you, points to Fincher for casting Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. should be in every movie that is out right now. Anything that is put out, Robert should be in it. Also, I love Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal is great.
Gyllenhaal was awesome. Downey Jr. same. I mean, I kind of didn't think Downey was the same character he was in all the movies he is now, that he is the drinking, crazy, womanizing, smart-lipped character.
Yeah, he wasn't very smart-lipped. He was just drinking.
But he was just drinking and womanizing.
No, he wasn't even womanizing, I don't think. He was just more like drinking, sad, and lonely. But also there was a guy I like. Mark Ruffalo was in it, and he was...
Yeah, for some reason, Fincher seems to do these police dramas well. Because just like how I say Seven, who has a great partnership between Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt,
mm-hmm.
Mark Ruffalo and I have to look up these other guys.
ER Man. Let's just call him Goose, Andrew.
Goose? Oh yeah, he was in that movie, wasn't he? All right, Anthony Edwards. Ruffalo and Anthony Edwards, who played Inspector David Toshi and Inspector William Armstrong. were both awesome, and I loved how they worked together as a dynamic. But, like, I mean, a lot of the things were true things. Like, for example, one thing that I loved and I laughed at a lot was the fact that Mark Ruffalo's character always had to have animal crackers.
Oh, yeah, right?
And that's actually real from the real Inspector David Toshi. There was actually, on the special DVD, Toshi came down to set to see what was going on. And he got, and Mark Ruffalo got him to sign his box of animal crackers. And he was like, can I keep this? Because he remembers it so well and stuff. You know, one of those, Fincher has a sense where he loves to pay attention to detail.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, even in Button, it was clear he was paying attention to detail.
And I think Button was, when his latest movie, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which got, I think, like 13 nominations for the Oscars, which just came out.
Right? Remember, Ben Affleck.
It seemed a lot like he has finally reached a point where CG and film no longer has that borderline that you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
Especially with Button.
Yeah, with Button it was clear it was CG, but at the same time, if you didn't know that it was if you were willing to
look at it and believe it for the moment without thinking too hard on the fact that CG exists or this isn't possible in real life.
Yeah, so clearly, I mean, thumbs up for that. He was spot on with the CG in Button. It's just that the whole, you know, story. And I shouldn't say acting. Acting was put it fairly well done, but it just never thrilled me. It wasn't that entertaining. I was not entertained, Andrew. Russell Crowe did not throw a spear at me and say, are you not entertained?
And that wasn't a spear, that was a sword.
Spear, sword, same thing. Kills people.
Oh, no, but, like, I was totally entertained, but in a different... It wasn't the same entertainment that you would get from, like, movies like Transformers. I was entertained in the fact that it was a great life story, even though... And even though everyone preyed on the fact that the movie was a guy aging backwards...
Yeah.
If you closed your eyes and you listened to the story, rather than looking at the pictures... You wouldn't have even thought it was a guy aging backwards.
No, that's true.
Because everything was just as if he was a normal person.
Yeah, everything was normal because clearly, I mean, you can't move time backwards as well. So it's going to move forwards and you're going to be, you know, a young person and naive when you're young, even though you look old and all that stuff, which it clearly played on. But it just... Like, look at Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is the same type of story.
No, yeah. Like I said in my review, it's Forrest Gump, except it's an old guy, and it's New Orleans.
And it's not anything.
And, yeah, it's not as heartwarming.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing about Forrest Gump. It was heartwarming.
It was fabulous to watch as well. And
it had a sweetness to it, which made everyone like it.
And it was almost as if you were seeing it through Forrest Gump's eyes, and Forrest Gump was so naive that everything looked good. Everything looked, you know, great. Everyone was to be trusted. Nobody did bad things, even when they did. You know, it was like, life's like a box of chocolates. You
know? did you see that someone put up on the internet a mashup video of Forrest Gump and Benjamin Button?
I saw it, and I tagged it, but I did not actually watch it, so... I think I may have lost it. You need to send it to me.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
A ton of science have it. No, I think Slash Film has it.
Oh, Slash Film. Am I going to have to brave through some more ads again?
Yes, you're going to. We're looking at articles from them. I like the site. Leave me alone.
No, clearly the site is informative. There are very many articles on the site. It's just that, you know, ads are all over the place. However, I have to say, I must not, you know, lay the blame only on Slash Film. I know I'm very upset with the man that everyone is upset with. Damn you, Alex Billington, for putting those pop-ups on your screen, on your site. I hate them so much. You know, the ones with, it looks like a link, so you hover over it. And then when you hover over it, this huge, like, fancy-looking box shows up. That has ads or shows, you know, the next page or something. It's awful. But whatever, I should really stop ranting. We were talking about
David Fincher. Right, we have a piece of news about Fincher.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we're going to get to that. I'm leaving that alone for the moment. But one thing that I want to talk about is that IMDb has him doing a movie for 2010 called Ness, which is
Have anything to do with the Loch Ness Monster?
No, nothing about the Loch Ness Monster.
You know what I saw? This movie looks pretty decent. It's an old movie, by the way. This is not something new. It's something about the Loch Ness Monster. Werner Herzog was in it, I think.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
It's just funny. I'm sure it's a parody. It has to
be. Is it an old movie or an...
I don't know how old it is. I saw it. Okay, let's talk about how long this was. I had just come back home from university, which means it was, say, late 2005, or early 2006.
No, that's 2005 when you came back.
I know, but I watched that. It could have been within that region. And it was just great. It's this documentary about these people who are going out to look for the Loch Ness Monster and things happen. Actually, Steve, what's his name? Glasses, he's in that Wes Anderson movie, Steve Zissou. Steve Zissou. The movie Steve Zissou, his arch enemy.
Oh,
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum
is in it for a second.
You're like people complain to me about how awful I am with like making up names or whenever I can't remember, but that was just a horrid description of whoever you were thinking of. You could have thought of The Fly.
I could have.
And that would
have
been...
I could have thought of, you know, the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. I could have thought of many things.
You could have even said Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, yeah, but, you know...
Freaking Steve Zissou. And you know you have to pick up one of the few Wes Anderson movies that I don't like.
You didn't like that movie. Come on.
Love the soundtrack. Exactly. As with every Wes Anderson movie, I love the soundtrack. But
I mean, it's almost completely Sue George, which is fantastic.
And that's the one thing I have to say. Thumbs up to the movie. It introduced me to Sue George.
Yeah. But anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, there's a Loch Ness Monster movie. It's clearly a parody, a mockumentary type thing. It's really good. Go check it out. Werner Herzog is in it. I don't know what the hell it's called. It's funny. Anyway, what's this Ness thing with David Fincher?
Yeah, apparently there's this movie. David Fincher is slated to direct this on IMDb, so of course we have to take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
It's in pre-production, apparently. It's supposed to come out in 2010, about Elliot Ness from the U.S. Treasury Department. Yeah, but this is apparently based off some graphic novel by Mark Adrienko and Brian Bendis. I haven't seen or read anything about this.
I think I heard about this
but
a while
the
back.
Plot synopsis here in IMDb is talking about... Hold on, the page needs to load. Wait, no, where... U.S. Treasury Department agent Elliot Ness becomes a public safety officer in Cleveland, where he assembles a team of retired cops to find a serial murderer who dumps his victims' torsos in the river.
Oh no, stop. I can tell you exactly what this is. This is Torso.
Then why the hell is it called Ness here?
Yeah, because once you hear the thing, the
Yeah, now that I'm reading it, I'm going like, well...
So, we have just, you know, accidentally told you about our news item that we were going to start off with. Apologies.
Yeah, it was something about Torso, but... Whoa.
I didn't realize that's what it was about.
It has Matt Damon and Casey Affleck rumored to star in the movie.
Okay, so I am officially stoked for this movie.
Which we don't know will ever happen.
And Matt Damon? You know what was the last movie they were in or that I remember seeing?
It was Jerry. Good Will Hunting.
No, Jerry. Another Gus Van Sant movie. I actually... Hey, be careful about the table there, sir. I saw that on TV the other day. It's about them getting lost in the desert. And it looked pretty cool. I didn't watch all of it.
Alright, I have to watch this movie now. I have to watch this movie now, Jerry. I'm going to put this in my must-watch list for this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that's interesting and something that could work towards Fincher's advantage. But as we're saying in our news item, which I guess we can just kind of mention right now before we go in, the rights. There's been some mess up with the rights for the movie. So, maybe it'll get made, maybe not, we hope. And yeah, also, another thing here on IMDb for 2010 that's been announced is Heavy Metal.
Heavy Metal, oh, cartoons.
Yeah, that cartoon. I never actually watched the movie. Have you seen it?
Either. Is Heavy Metal the one with John Candy where...
I have no clue who's in it. All I know is it's a cartoon film and it's like in space and people are in weird suits.
I think it is. I have seen it and I didn't enjoy it that much. I thought it was okay. It's kind of a nice weird movie to watch every now and again, but I wouldn't watch the whole thing after that, and I probably would only watch it in pieces. It's okay. Kind of fun to watch.
So what did you have to say about Dave Fincher on a whole as a director, career maker?
I would say that clearly he is good. He's a great filmmaker. You can't really bash him for the missteps that he's made. He hasn't really made that many. There was Alien 3, which was, again, his first movie. You can't stop him for that. Benjamin Button, which actually wasn't a bad movie, so I can't really say anything bad about that either. So, David Fincher, what? 10 out of 10, just for fact.
I have to say, I'm not gonna be as brave as you to hand a number over to him. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. I mean, I did do a top 10 directors list a couple months back, and I still say I don't think he's gonna break it, because I still love a lot more directors over him.
I could name one.
Steven Spielberg
doesn't count.
How does that not count?
Because I said so.
Moving on. David Fincher, I think he's an amazing director, and when his name is attached to a project, I will want to watch it before I even hear the name of the project, the synopsis of the project, who else is in it. I don't care if Fincher's name is attached, I'm going to watch it. I mean, I've become a fan of practical effects. And that's the only thing I can say against Fincher. I mean, I love animated films like WALL-E, which I must say on this IMDb page has him as a thanks. So he had something to do with WALL-E. So, you know, gives him a little extra push for me, you know.
I take it back. David Fincher, you are the bane of my existence. I hate you for all that you have done. Especially WALL-E. How could you do this, sir?
I don't know what he did, but they thanked him, so he must have done something. Maybe he introduced...
Why did you let that movie get made? Why? Why?
And stuff like that. But whenever it comes to like live-action films, especially now that I'm starting to watch a lot of older ones, like 70s, 80s stuff, I've become a fan of when they just have practical effects. Mm-hmm. And I mean... I don't hate a movie for using CGI, but when the CG looks bad, or when the CGI could easily have been done with practical effects where it looked better, that's all I ask. Just like with Panic Room, where you saw those crazy shots going through all the rooms, I'm sure he could have found a way to do that in a better than...
I know how he could have done it.
What?
Open a door. There you go.
You mean like at the beginning of JCVD?
I haven't seen that movie yet, man. Chill out. I haven't watched it.
The movie's awesome. But yeah, David Fincher, definitely a name to watch out for. He's only done one.
Was it seven movies?
Seven movies. Yeah. He's only done seven. And
out of those seven, only two were not great. So
yeah,
that's amazing. You know, that's 5/7, whatever percent. Whatever percentage that is.
Didn't you graduate with a math major?
So?
Are you supposed to be able to, like, divide really quickly or something?
I'm not good with the calculations. That's why I have a calculator.
Whoa, that's special. Okay, so... Alright. That's the end of David Fincher talk. Let's get into our new segment.
Where we start some more David Fincher.
Yeah, we start off with David Fincher, just like what we said a couple minutes ago. The, like, Torso, the Elliot Ness story, graphic novel done by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Adrenko. Something's gone wrong with the rights. Apparently, at this point, the rights have been lost.
Who's the studio?
We have to always ask this question now. Who would do such a thing? I think it's Warner Brothers.
Paramount is the studio.
How could you, Paramount? Well, then again, they did release Indiana Jones.
Oh, come on. But they also released Indiana Jones 1, 2, 3, 1, 2 and 3.
But that was a long time ago.
20 years ago.
Exactly. That was before, you know, they got. I have nothing to say.
You have nothing to say.
Nothing to say. Paramount, I am disappointed. Verily so. If you do not make up, we will have some words.
As I was saying, from just the information that was available on IMDb, Matt Damon starring
Casey Affleck as well. And these are,
David Fincher.
Hopeful.
And the plot synopsis that I read a while ago. This movie seems viably interesting. I'm already ready to order the graphic novel so that I know what the hell the story is.
Yeah.
As we've said, Seven Zodiac, two of David Fincher's best movies, about serial killers. About serial killers.
Yeah.
So here's another serial killer story.
2 + 2 = 4. David Fincher should be directing.
David Fincher should do this movie immediately, and we should stop worrying about the rights, as we've learned with Watchmen news. Just do the movie and it'll all fall in place. Alright. So, like, that's definitely something I'm looking forward to and hoping that it ends up happening. Right, but moving on to the next news story we have here. Bill Hader and Judd Apatow are working together on a horror film.
I would like to say that I have become the biggest fan of Bill Hader. I don't watch Saturday Night Live, but I do watch all the big Apatow productions with him in it, and I think he's great. He is hilarious.
Nothing beats him as a police officer. Super bad.
We should hide his cock. We don't block his cock. I love that.
You just cock block me.
But what's he going to do though? Is he going to impersonate Mike Myers or something? He's a good impressionist, but is he going to actually be like some big serial killer? What's the deal here?
Right. So, all right. First of all, we'll start off with Judd Apatow. He's like made amazing comedies. One after another.
By one after another, do you mean the two that he's actually made?
Well, I mean, being a director isn't the only way you make a movie.
That's true, but he's produced about everything under the sun. I'm sure if you go to his production list, you're going to find so many that just didn't do well at all. Like, there was Drillbit Taylor.
That was horrible.
Right?
All right, let's look at his producer list, right? Pineapple Express, awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
Step Brothers, awesome.
Nah,
Drillbit Taylor, crap. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, awesome.
Amazing.
Walk Hard, The Story of Dewey Cox, horrible. Superbad and Knocked Up, he directed those as well. No, he did not direct Superbad.
That
he didn't direct Superbad. That was Greg Mottola. Yeah. Sorry. Superbad, awesome. Knocked Up, he directed as well. Awesome. Talladega Nights, awesome.
Oh man, that's so funny.
The TV set, that's that movie with
David Duchovny. It's not that great.
I thought it was pretty good.
It's okay.
And it's a pretty good movie, especially for one that no one would know about.
Yeah.
Something you just catch on TV and you'd be surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
American Storage, I don't know what that is. 40-year-old
virgin.
What? The American Storage.
I don't know that one.
It looks like it's a short film. There's also The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which you don't like. I think it's okay.
I think it's less than average, but not awful, awful.
Kicking and Screaming, that was horrible.
Which one's Kicking and Screaming again?
That's the one with the...
That's Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell
as the football
guy.
The football team. And yes, I said football. There's Anchorman. I didn't like it, but after watching Talladega Nights, I think maybe if I watch it now, I might like it.
Yeah.
And all the stuff before, I don't even know their TV stuff. You know, let's see, his directing stuff, he has Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, and the new movie coming out this year that I want to watch, Funny People.
Yes, that looks amazing. Also, remember, the RZA is in it.
Hey, Adam...
Protect your neck, fool.
Adam Sandler, awesome.
Yeah. Wait, did you just say Adam Sandler was awesome? I think you did.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
That's something I keep inside. I don't let that one out.
I have to say, Andrew, for somebody who publicly shows such disgust for any Adam Sandler movie, if for you to say that is...
I still haven't seen Bedtime Stories. I don't want to watch Bedtime Stories.
I don't want to watch that either. It does not look good at all. However, I'll probably watch it then.
I'll probably watch it when it comes on DVD. So yeah, what do you think these guys can do when it comes to RO? Do you think they have a chance at? Because as we look through his production list, not even as a producer has he ventured into anything out of comedy.
Exactly. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what they come up with. But then something just hit me a while ago. I was, you know, I thought this was a bit dubious, right? It didn't make sense, the whole horror thing. But did you not watch the fake trailer with Edgar Wright and all of his cronies? That was the best fake trailer out of them all in between the two movies in Grindhouse.
Are you talking about Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, the trio who made Shaun of the Dead?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So are you trying to compare them with like being able to do it horror when it comes to the trailer for Grindhouse, what they did Shaun of the Dead before?
Damn it, Andrew, why are you speaking logically right now? I was thinking of them more as a comedy people. All right. And then I was like, well, comedy.
The official scoreboard. 1 Andrew, 0 Douglas.
But that's unfair because you see, nobody gets to hear the banter off the air. Because if they would, then they would know it was more like, you know, 50 Douglas and 1 Andrew. It would be something.
Why? Because
like,
you knew she was a drug dealer.
Exactly. I know that you are a drug dealer, Andrew. It would be like how Colin Farrell said in Rouge, it tips kind of a little bit in somebody else's favor.
Like, what black girl? On a seesaw.
It tips in the favor.
That was my horrible attempt to impersonate Colin Farrell in Bruges doing his Irish accent.
Yes, you cannot do Irish accents. Nor can I, so I do not try.
I'm actually afraid to like hear what I sound like when I do an accent.
Oh, you'll hear it this time. I'll play it for you every day.
Alright, moving on, right? My last moment on Hader and Judd Apatow horror, I think, you know, it's more of a Shaun of the Dead scenario. Or like an Evil Dead. Like, it's going to turn
Evil
out...
Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, Evil Dead.
Where it's going to turn out to be a comedy anyway, just sitting in the horror setting. And if it's that, it'll be awesome. If not, it's worth a try. Diversify. That's the thing.
Exactly.
Right? Now, this was something I really queued up for Damon, because he's a huge Metal Gear Solid fan.
So are you, though. You're a big
fan. Yeah, I love Metal Gear Solid, but no way in comparison. No way in comparison. But he's not here, but we're going to talk about it anyways.
Okay.
Hideo Kojima, the creator of Metal Gear Solid.
The man who you lust after every single
time. Yeah, I keep wishing I had a PS3 so I could play the fourth one. He has released the 15 movies that he says influenced him.
One of them was Die Hard.
Right?
Nice.
Alright, I'm just going to list them off and we can talk about them after.
Okay.
The Guns of Navarone, The Great Escape, Goldfinger, 2001 A Space Odyssey, The Original Planets of the Apes. Planet of the Apes, sorry. I just totally messed that up. The Deer Hunter, Dawn of the Dead, Full Metal Jacket, Predator, Die Hard, Heat, Black Hawk Down, Children of Men, The Bourne Trilogy, and Casino Royale.
Yeah.
With the Daniel Craig version, in case anyone was worried.
What's wrong with the original?
Woody Allen.
What about Woody Allen? Woody Allen is one of the best, one of the top filmmakers.
James Bond should not be like that. That's all I have to say. I'm so happy with the new James Bonds that they've made him so gritty and real. I mean, Casino Royale was shit. Wait, I'm mixing it up. Whoa. Quantum of Solace. I meant to say Quantum of Solace is shit.
It's not. Why? I don't understand why everybody's like, oh, it's, you know, the Bourne Supremacy Part 4 because the camera shakes, you know?
No, it's not because the camera shakes why people hate it and why I hate it. It's because the action scenes are so horrible to understand
due to horrible editing. I'll give you the first scene. Car chase scene was chopped up a bit too
much. Alright, you know what? I want to stop this right now. I'll promise you this. I will rewatch the movie.
I've watched it a second time and I enjoyed it.
No, I'm going to rewatch the movie. I've thought about it recently. I'm going to rewatch it to check.
Uh-huh.
To, you know, make sure that I'm not being completely hard because of a first experience. You know, it gave me a bad first impression.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get back to you.
Okay.
And then I'll probably have even better arguments because it'll be fresh in my mind at that point.
But if all you'll be like is foreign identity, shaky camera.
No, it started with supremacy. Identity wasn't green.
That's
started
true.
With supremacy.
However, I have to say, you got good on the third one.
Yeah, the third one was just great. But I think that's mainly due to the fact that there was tons more action in that one.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to the list, right? Out of all these movies, is there anything that like stands out at you?
Die Hard. I love Die Hard. I love Heat. Heat, I think I said this already, but I watched it recently, and this is now one of my favorite movies ever. I love it. It's just spectacular. Val Kilmer is really good. He is an actor that, though sometimes, well, maybe a lot of the times, he's in either bad movies or just doesn't pull off his role very well. When he catches it right, when he decides, you know what, I am going to be a really good actor for this hour and a half or 2 hours that the movie is going to be, then he is amazing. And this is one of those times that he did that. Other than that, I haven't seen many of the movies. Goldfinger, you know I love. I bought it just the other day.
We're going to sit down and watch that.
Oh, yeah. I've watched it once already. Bring it on, man. Watching it again. Guns of Navarone, everybody loves it. I've never seen it.
I saw it once. Like, it was on TV once, and I sat down and watched it. It's a great movie.
Yeah, The Great Escape. I've seen snippets, but not the whole
thing. Actually, I haven't seen The Great Escape
it's
at all.
It's been on TV recently.
The only thing that I can say about The Great Escape is Robert Downey Jr. saying, "What if Steve McQueen didn't run away in The Great Escape? What would they have there?" I don't really know anything about that.
Yeah, Full Metal Jacket. I don't know. A lot of people love this movie. I am of two minds.
Stanley Kubrick is a really hard director to like. Like, I mean, 2001 A Space Odyssey is also on the list. I recently watched this movie a month ago, and I didn't like it. Right? And I can imagine the amount of flack the world wants to give me right now for not liking a Stanley Kubrick movie. But you know what? Shut up.
The movie. You're going to start another argument again, you know.
The movie took 40 minutes to get to the story, and this isn't like Atonement, where it had 40 minutes of something going on which was slightly related. No, absolutely no relation to what was going on in the real story. And the real story, when they get to the ship and they have people and they talk, that's pretty good. That part of the movie is pretty damn good. But the first 40 minutes with just monkeys. They have monkeys just doing crazy shit.
Like, they get into never mind Red Man.
Oh, oh my youth.
But yeah, I've heard that the movie takes a long time to get to the point, and that the first, you know, audible human voice is 40 something minutes into the movie. I hear
it annoyed the crowd. I spent like it took maybe 10 to 15 minutes to show the title on the screen, I think. Uh-huh. I was worrying as to if I had gotten the right movie.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Hey, look in the DVD case, you're like, is this the right one?
Like, did they swap it or something? And that was like driving me up the wall watching this movie.
I need to watch it. I haven't watched it. I've been meaning to for a very long time since you got it. So I need to do that. Yeah. But again, like I was saying about Full Metal Jacket, I'm of two minds because I really enjoy the first hour. I think it's fantastic. The training camp
I agree with you.
It's great. I mean, you see the characters develop as well. But then when it gets into the war, and again, I have not seen this movie in maybe 5 years, and my tastes have changed since then. There are a lot of movies that I've had to make 180s on that I did not like then that I love now. So maybe this will be one of those. But I did not enjoy the war part of it. It wasn't, again, entertaining to me at the time. So, there's that. And Kubrick, I enjoy some Kubrick. I love the smile on Clockwork Orange. That is a fantastic movie. Andrew is there shrugging his shoulders, dropping his head because he hates it.
I think it's like, that is my Requiem for a Dream. Right? Requiem for a Dream, as well as Clockwork Orange, I have to agree, are both technically brilliant movies. Like, the story is great, the the camera work is awesome, the direction is great, but with A Clockwork Orange, I was highly disturbed and I never wanted to watch it again. I the first time I watched it, I got half an hour in and I turned it off. And then the second time, I watched it with someone who basically had to watch it for a class.
Yeah.
And I forced myself to sit down and get through the whole movie. And I just never wanted to see it again. While with Requiem for a Dream, I feel the same exact way, in that it depresses me to tears. I've watched it 3 times in my life.
Whoa, you're better than me. I've seen it only twice.
And every time I've watched it with someone else, which again forces me to go all the way through because they haven't seen it before. And I don't think I ever want to watch that movie alone. I think if I watch it alone,
I did that once. That you was may the last
not,
time I
you,
watched
you
it.
You may not know, you may not see me anymore.
Yeah. I was very tempted, Andrew. Actually, I wasn't tempted. What happened was I put it this way instead of that way. I put it along the vein, so nothing really happened. But
let's not joke about that. That's kind of hard to joke about. Whoa. Yeah, a movie on this list that I'm happy to see is Children of Men. It was one of my favorite movies when it came out.
Coran is an amazing director. He did, you know, classics like Harry Potter 3.
I hate that one.
I actually love that movie, but that's not his classic. His big claim to fame is Itu Mama Tambien, which is amazing.
That is
Gael
a good movie.
Garcia Bernal, who I love. It also has a person who I apologize. I don't know what the hell his name is. But I love him. He is in your movie that you didn't like with John C. Reilly as the con artist.
Oh, the criminal movie.
Yeah,
criminal
movie.
I'm gonna try and pull up his name now.
I just love his, as with him and
Diego Luna.
Diego Luna, probably.
He was in Milk as well.
He was in Milk?
Yeah.
Oh no, I have to watch Milk. Yeah, that's him. That's him. That's him right there. So I just love his style, the way he. I like him. It's almost like a Hugh Grant thing. Hugh Grant is in a lot of crappy movies.
But I have to say, Milk, he is the most annoying character in the movie.
No, he can't be. It's Diego Luna.
I mean, some people like to pick on Emil Hirsch in that movie, but no, Diego Luna. he really annoyed me. Anyways. I think that's all we can really say about these movies, unless you want to go on about James Bond again. I haven't seen The Deer Hunter. I love Predator.
Predator, yes. Predator's a good movie.
I actually haven't seen the original Planet of the Apes movie.
Nor have I. Did you watch Black Hawk Down? I didn't watch it at the time.
I didn't watch it at the time, and I don't think I've gotten to catch up on that one. So yeah, there's not much else we can really say about this. Bourne Trilogy, awesome.
Yeah. Children of Men, one of the very few movies where Clive Owen is good in.
I keep telling people that I can't wait for Hideo Kojima to try working on a film. Not necessarily Metal Gear, but something, because I think, like, all the cutscenes in his game, they're so well directed that it looks like he would do well as a filmmaker.
Maybe, I don't know. I have never. Well, I shouldn't say I'm not a big fan of Metal Gear, because I have never really played it. I played. The one on PS2. Which one is that? Probably the second one.
There are three of them on the PS2.
Probably the second one. Metal Gear Solid.
I actually saw that in a store and I was thinking about getting it because I don't have a physical copy for myself.
Yeah, I've played that one.
I borrowed it from
a
friend when I played it.
But no, the games, you know, they're fun. But I don't know about this whole theatrical thing you're talking about. We really watch a lot of cutscenes. But Hero movie is one of the news articles.
Yeah, one that I'm definitely up for.
Oh,
you know, if you remember when Kill Bill was being released, it was being played up as a single film, and at the last minute they cut it into two. Right now, Quentin Tarantino, and when after the two films came out, they always talked about re-releasing a DVD cut of the two of them together, right. And it never happened as usual with Harvey Weinstein.
Damn you, Weinstein.
I keep saying the name and thinking about Entourage.
I know.
Quentin Tarantino is talking that the DVD release is still going to happen with The Whole Bloody Affair, which will also have an extra 7 minutes, which will be towards the anime bit.
Right,
as well
apparently
as other
the anime
stuff is
going to be gorier, but you know what, though? He's changing it. He's changing the black and white part into color, isn't he?
I have no problem. Give it to me. I'll watch it. I'll probably love it.
I'd, I wish, though, that he'd keep the original version as well.
Yeah, you can buy those DVDs separately.
No, I know, but that's the thing. If I want a special edition, I want to get everything. I want to get the original just in case I don't like the special, or just in case I just want to watch the original, plus the special.
I used to think that way, but I've come to the realization that you're buying a movie, right? And you're buying a movie, like, if you're buying the director's cut, why do you want the other cut? I mean, in some cases, you haven't seen the director's cut, and you're buying it on good faith because you like the director, or you like the movie, or you like to see a different version of it, or something. But you've already come to the conclusion that you have faith in that director, or you want to see a different version. And I mean, it would be the safe bet to want to have the other version on it. But generally, if you're buying it, you already know you're getting a different movie.
Yeah, but I like to hedge my bets.
No, you gotta shit or get off the pot. You can't hedge your bets. So,
yeah, this is a good thing. I mean, I've been waiting for the special edition to come up for me to get it, because he's been promising it for... How long did it take? Has it been...
Are you talking about Grindhouse?
5-6 years that this movie came out?
Yeah, it's been a while.
A long time. I'm actually hoping for, like you said a while ago, the Grindhouse special edition to come out sometime soon.
Harvey Weinstein. Like, as everyone's hating on Fox, I've hated on Weinstein Company for quite a while.
Yeah, it's very annoying. The movie didn't get released out here. I had to wait until it was on Stars HD or what you call it.
To get that, to see the actual theatrical version.
Yeah, it was so annoying. And I love it. I love the trailers in between. I love, you know, I know a lot of people don't. A lot of people did not like.
I love that movie. Scenes,
but I love both of them.
I mean, most people like Planet Terror, yeah, and hate Death Proof.
Because Death Proof is more of a Tarantino movie than what it's trying to be, which is a B movie. Mm-hmm. Because it's very.
It's Tarantino
heavy
inserting himself into the B movie genre.
Exactly. Whereas what Rodriguez did is he said, you know what, I'm going to make a B movie. And he did it, and it worked well. But I don't know. I enjoy all of it. And I would love for him to come out with, you know, the special edition with both the extended cuts of each and the theatrical version with the trailers in between. That would be just marvelous.
Like, when it comes to Tarantino, as I've said, he's one of my favorite directors. Everyone tries to rain on me all the while for it. But it's I trust in him. If he releases 3 editions of a movie, I'm going to buy the 3 separate editions. Just because it's Tarantino. I mean, I can't wait for him to release a different edition of Jackie Brown, which is actually good. I'm sure he has it somewhere. But as I've said, Weinstein. So, you know, it's... And also, I'd like to hint, you know, birthday present idea.
All of the internet can send you a big birthday present.
They don't know when my birthday is. But
I will tell them. I will tell you, all of you, if you pay me.
Why would they pay to find out my birthday?
So they could send you a birthday present.
I'd feel, like, so amazed if, like, people actually sent me stuff. I remember listening to Film Spotting, and someone actually sent Adam Kempinar the Wire box set as a Christmas gift because he kept saying he wants to watch it but never found the time or didn't get a hold of it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you had to spend your money on that one. And you could have gotten it for cheaper too.
Yeah. I'm still happy. I just started season 3 last night. Oh, I can't wait until I finish it. And I've watched
Tom Waits didn't sing for season 3.
Yeah, I have to say that's like I remember season 4 and 5 very vividly because that's recent. And I hadn't watched the show since it was first aired, so I don't remember 1, 2, and 3 as well. I remember the point of the seasons, the main story.
Right.
And I remember a couple definite things. But I used to always remember Tom Waits singing the song for those first 3 seasons. Because that's who we were searching for.
Yeah.
And we found after a year or 2 when you went away and came back with the song. And that's how we found out about Tom Waits. And now he's like one of our favorite.
He is one of my favorite singers, I have to say. I mean, oh man, some of those songs, Alice and Underground, and oh, it's so great. For those of you guys listening, if you don't know
who Tom Waits is,
just check him out. He's great. Anything he get the album Alice. That is a good album to start.
Yeah. And, I mean, now that I'm rewatching it, I'm feeling so sad that he was only singing season 2, which I have to say, so far, it's a good season. Every season of The Wire is awesome. But it's my least favorite mainly because of certain characters.
Certain characters? Did this have to do with anything in the bar? Dropping out? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it was that character, but it wasn't that certain thing that he did.
Oh, you like that?
No.
I see.
No.
I understand, Andrew. Okay.
No, I mean, I've come to terms with the fact that this is what's going to happen in film, and I'm not one of those people who run away because there's a gay character or there's some or they're having full frontal nudity of males. Like, what's the point of arguing with it? I mean, I'm a guy. I'm sure I want the full frontal of the female more than I want the full frontal of the male. But, you know, we have to have equal rights. We have to have... the women need to see something too, and not all of them are lesbians. So, hey, if that's what's going to be there, that's what's going to be there. I have absolutely no problem with that. As long as, you know, it's done within context.
You know, however, the female just happens to drop their pants. That doesn't need any context.
No, that
what you're saying?
That needs context.
Is that what you're saying?
No, no. If it's not in context, that means you're watching porn.
Actually, there is some context there as well. You know exactly what's going to happen.
No, no, the context in porn is, hi, mister, hi, missus, it's dropped. But anyways, we have gone too far. Moving on to our next news item, J.K. Simmons has confirmed and he will be returning for Spider-Man 4. No, this really isn't anything special to talk about because I'm assuming we both like J.K. Simmons in the Spider-Man. As
yeah, he is great in Spider-Man. He was great in Juno. He looks like he's going to be great in Yes Man. What's the name of the Paul Rudd movie? I Love You, Man.
I Love You, Man.
Yeah, he looks like
he was
like
also good in Burn After Reading.
Yeah, he was.
Even though I wasn't a big fan of that movie, I liked him.
Yeah. He's a funny guy. He really is. He's a good actor as well. But when he wants to be funny, when he needs to be funny for a role, he can. It's great.
So, really, the question I was coming around to with this news item was, are you looking forward to Spider-Man 4 after the debacle that was 3? I mean, it was announced a while back that
the
villain would probably be Morbius, the vampire, leading up to the reptile, the what is it again? Reptile, the lizard. Lizard,
yeah. That's, which, he's been in the movies since
They've been queuing him up forever.
Yeah. But, I don't know. Let's think about it. Let's weigh the pros and the cons here. We've got J.K. Simmons.
And that's also Tobey Maguire and
Kirsten Dunst
are in the movie.
Okay.
So we also have them.
Right. So we've got J.K. Simmons is a plus. Sam Raimi signed on. That's a plus. Clearly,
I'm sure
Sam Raimi
Campbell
is
will be there
exactly,
somewhere.
I was getting there. If Sam Raimi is there, we're going to see Ted, his brother, and we're going to see Bruce's best friend.
Hold on. Has Ted been in the movies? I haven't seen him at all.
Ted Raimi is in everyone. Raimi is the...
But can you point him out for me with all those?
I believe so. He's a guy that... he came up with Doc Ock. Remember, he's
that is Ted. Whoa.
Ted Raimi is the assistant.
Oh,
to
I feel so stupid. Just like when I found out Elizabeth Banks was the secretary. I was... like, so amazed, but whoa.
Yes.
And
yes.
She said she won't come back.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, she's in a position now where anything that she does, it makes sense, okay?
It's kind of, I'm going to be honest. I mean, I like Elizabeth Banks because she's, you know, she's pretty. Mm-hmm. I like her as an actress and stuff, but god damn it. Pay your dues, you know. Come back for Scrubs. Do Spidey 4 just for the 3 days of shooting. Raimi will need you.
But they don't need her though. She was,
yeah, they don't really need her for
Spider-Man.
She was
Spider-Man. A character that was unnecessary.
They don't really need her
also,
for Spider-Man.
I'm sure that she'll come back for Scrubs if they pay her.
I'm sure they were offering, but she was like, I'm doing 10 movies this year. As we spoke about last week.
Yeah, that's true. She did a lot of movies. And that's good for her. Hey, listen. That means her career is taking off. Don't hate on the girl just because she's doing good.
I wanted her to be in Scrubs. I miss her.
Maybe
in
she
Scrubs.
Will be. Maybe she'll come on for like a couple minutes and be like, hey, Dorian, bye.
I hate you. I hate your guts. And they give a logical reason for her to leave the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, back to the idea. Do we want Spider-Man 4?
I don't know if I want it. I don't know. I don't think I don't want it, but I will be going, I will be watching, and I will go with an open mind.
Well, I have to say the same. I think Spider-Man 3 was a fluke, because 1 and 2 are awesome. And
they
3
are.
And 3, as we've heard, is really studio intervention, because apparently Raimi didn't want Venom in the movie.
Right, I remember that.
And that was one of the biggest problems in the movie, the Venom storyline. Because if there was no Venom, right, you wouldn't have had...
What's the guy's name? Who, Thomas Hayden Church? Or
no, the guy Topher who played Grace. Topher Grace was going to be in the movie, but you wouldn't have him changing into Venom. You wouldn't have the dance sequence. You wouldn't have the air thrusting in the middle of the street by Tobey Maguire. You wouldn't have all of those stuff wouldn't have happened. And you would have had a regular Spider-Man comic book superhero movie with Sandman and Hobgoblin, which is what he wanted to do. And I think the Sandman storyline would have been so interesting. But because he had to give time to Venom, everything got muddled and...
I suppose that you have a point there, but I don't know. I mean, I didn't like the Sandman at all. I thought Venom was actually the better of the two villains, but at the same time, like you said, it wasn't pulled off extremely well anyway.
I just hope they leave him alone and let him do Morbius like he wants.
Yes, that would be great. Sam Raimi, I mean, I love Sam Raimi. I think a lot of his movies are great. I mean, come on, Evil Dead alone, that you get a lifetime achievement award for. That's the type of, you know,
yeah. Alright, so we're open-minded to Spider-Man 4.
Right.
And our last bit of news comes from Spike Lee. And he's talking about the sequel to The Inside Man, his most commercially successful film, and critically at the same time.
And it was pretty good, too.
Yeah, as I said, critically.
I remember when I went to it with you, and I loved it. I thought it was great.
And I had to force you to go. I remembered. You were like, this movie's going to be bad.
Because Clive Owen was in it. Come on.
You're talking about the dude from Children of Men.
What else?
Sin City.
Three movies.
Shoot 'em up.
Shucks. You're catching me here, aren't you?
Score 2 Andrew.
Wait. But there's 4. What else? You can't count The Bourne Identity because he was only in it for 5 minutes.
All right, let me pull up his IMDb page because I can't remember. But I'm sure
he's in all sorts of other things that were
I'm
crap.
Sure there's other stuff
he's
that I like.
He's in The International that looks awful.
Yeah, that looks awful, but that's not out yet. We can't hate on something that we haven't seen.
I actually like the Pink Panther.
No, but he's only in it for two seconds. Derailed was crap.
Yes, it was.
I liked Closer.
Closer was awful. I hated it.
I liked that movie.
It was bad.
King Arthur was bad. I hadn't seen Beyond Borders, but I heard bad things.
Oh, is that the one with Angelina Jolie?
Yeah, that's the one with Angelina Jolie.
That was bad.
Hostage. Oh, no, this is his
oh, that's the BMW
stuff, which yeah. I loved. I loved all those BMW things.
This is kind of lame.
And yeah, there wasn't much before that.
Yeah, before that, he was in a show, like
TV
a cop
shows,
show
TV
on
shows,
BBC.
Yeah, which we can't... But I have to say, Clive Owen is a good thing, generally.
Eh.
And he also has a cool movie coming up, Duplicity, this year, which looks...
It looks
good.
Like it could be okay, but I am very, what's the word? Doubtful. I hope it could be good, because, you know, I wish him well. I wish everyone well. But facts are the facts. I don't...
Alright, so yeah, Spike Lee comes out and talks about Inside Man 2. Of course, we already know Denzel.
Is Clint Eastwood going to be in this one?
No.
Why not?
They're not on talking terms, I think. And if you don't get the joke, we're talking about a news item that surfaced over the summer where Spike Lee called Clint Eastwood a racist for his war movies he did previously.
Because not enough black people.
Flags of Our Fathers and...
Letter to Iwo Jima,
and there were no black characters in them for some reason. I haven't seen either of these. Actually, I watched half of Flags of Our Fathers and turned it off, falling asleep. I haven't seen Iwo Jima. I guess I'll kind of force myself one of these days, but it's not on my must-watch list. However, back to point.
Okay.
Right? The guy's name who I can't pronounce.
Oh, with Jibbitipur.
Yeah, he's in the original Inside Man. He's also in Children of Men.
He's so good.
He's also in that movie you like with him as the whatchamacallit, the gangster.
Not American Gangster.
Not American Gangster. Like there's a different one where he's the head gangster. It's a comedy-ish one. Four Brothers or something. Yeah, it's Four Brothers.
Oh, I did not like that movie.
But you liked him.
I said to you, I like him because he's a good actor.
Oh, I thought you liked the movie.
I liked him in the movie.
I didn't like that movie. But he was in Four Brothers. I'm talking about Chitiwi Ejiofor. I can't pronounce
his
name.
I think his last name is Ejiofor, but I'm not sure.
Alright, it's spelled Ejiofor. How is that pronounced? Ejiofor.
Chiwetel, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say from now on. Chiwetel Ejiofor. Can I just call him Chewbacca?
Chewy, call him Chewy.
Chewy. All right, from now on, Chiwetel Ejiofor, even though I love him as an actor and he deserves me learning how to pronounce his name.
His name is now Chewy.
His name is now Chewy because I'll never get it right. I'm sure I'm going to get some angry emails.
Oh, yeah.
Denzel Washington, Jodie Foster, as well as Clive Owen are all back for the sequel.
Right.
And the whole
idea... I don't understand. How are they going to... And I guess Spike Lee is going to have to answer this, but... How are they going to bring Jodie Foster back into the fray? She was just... And the British guy again. What the hell? Because he was this bad guy that did this one diamond heist, and she was this not-so-good business lady that did this one thing for this rich guy who, had Nazi links and didn't want it found. How are they going to bring all of these people back together for another scenario? That just doesn't make any sense.
I'm not sure either. I mean, as they said, their whole scripting thing, I don't think it's finished writing yet.
Yeah, because they changed it.
The whole scripting thing is they're going to do basically the same thing over, but in a different stage.
Well, no, didn't they say that was the original script which Spike Lee decided to trash, and now he's got a new screenwriter that is writing a new script for him that just either finished or finished Act 1, because... He said, apparently Spike Lee said that the guy is finished, and right after he said he's finished with Act 1. So nobody's quite sure if that means he finished Act 1 last, and so that's the last thing left in the script, or he only finished Act
1. Alright, so yeah, you're right. They discarded the first script, and they're rewriting it, but we don't know how far they've reached. But, I don't know how well this movie will do as a sequel. I think it's really Spike Lee being forced because he doesn't have that many commercial films. His movie, especially recently, his newest movie, Miracle at St. Anna, didn't do very well.
Well, from all accounts, it wasn't a very good movie.
Either. Yeah, but that's my point.
No, but he generally, no matter what you say about him, I mean, I don't really like him. But most of his
just
movies
because you
are
met
pretty
him.
Decent.
What was it you said to him?
Well, you know, he was talking. He was talking about New York and all this foolishness. And about how the Yankees are so much better than the Red Sox. And then there was this big argument with him and this other dude. And then I just had to say, what about the Knicks? And he shut up and did it. It was very, you know, not heartwarming, but it was funny to watch him just kind of like be, oh yeah, I do have another team that sucks. He took off his New York cap and put it down and he shed a tear.
I'm going to have to say, like many news like this that I don't really care for, I'm waiting for a trailer.
Yeah.
Because I love the first one, I'll probably watch the second.
Oh, yeah, I'll watch a second, too, because, again, like you said, I love the first one. The first one is great. But I just don't see it working. I don't see it meshing as a second movie because all of these people came together randomly, and I don't see how they can keep coming together randomly again. I guess that's Spike Lee. Now, what we're going to go into is we're going to look at some trailers. We've got some very good ones today. Well, I don't know if they're very good trailers, but... It looks like it's a trailer for a very good movie.
Here's the movie that you've been wanting to watch and Fox doesn't want me to watch.
Fox, give us the screener, please.
Here's a trailer for a film which debuted at Sundance a couple of days ago. And every film site that I follow has given it a perfect score, more or less.
Yeah.
It's the newest movie directed by Mark Webb.
Zooey Deschanel,
starring Zooey Deschanel. It's called 500 Days of Summer.
This is not a love story. It's a story about love. Days of Los Angeles, of promises, of uncertainty, of summer. Fox Searchlight Pictures presents 500 Days of Summer. Days of magic, of distance, of tenderness. Starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Tom and Zoe Deschanel as Summer. 500 Days of Intimacy, of Awkwardness, of Passion. 500 Days of Fury, of Ecstasy, of Summer. Days of Summer. Coming soon.
Okay, so that was the 500 Days of Summer trailer. And I have to say, just like with Slam and Salmon, that trailer was awful.
I have to disagree. Disagree. I love that trailer.
Okay. But let me finish, right? First of all, the voiceover is horrendous. I don't know who hired that guy. I mean, I don't think I'm that good of a speaker, and I think I could have done a better job. Also, part of it wasn't his fault. Whoever wrote the stuff to tell him to say, they need to get fired as well. That was not good. But to just deal with the movie itself, the trailer, I guess the images of it look like it's going to be an okay movie. But at the same time, there were a lot of images there with some animation superimposed. And it almost looked like something that I'd be watching on the Disney Channel 10 years ago when I was 5 years old. You know? Well, not 10 years ago. I'm a little bit older than 15.
Right,
but
because
you know
they have
that
one shot with like animation in it and so.
Yeah, it looks like he's almost dancing with a bluebird or something. Which is just ridiculous. Which song?
In that Chevy Chase movie. I can't remember what the name of it is. The Bluebird song with the animation, and he has a bluebird and a dog. Can't remember. I feel stupid because I never bothered to look this up.
Chevy Chase?
Yeah.
Which movie is this? Do you remember?
I can't remember the name. It's something about a house.
A house? Oh, a house.
Let me pull up Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase. It's not Fletch you're talking about, is it? That movie doesn't have any singing.
I think it... I might be wrong, you know. My memory...
Well, what I was thinking you were talking about at first was a song in Three Amigos.
No, not that one. Remember that one.
Not My Little Buttercup.
No, not that one.
Sweetest smile. Well, I don't know
Let me look at Fletch.
He's not a detective, but a reporter, and he goes all over the place.
I think it's Funny Farm.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie, so I don't really remember.
I don't remember.
Chevy Chase is
It might not be a Chevy Chase movie, but it comes into the scene and they like walk out into the garden and an animated bluebird comes on and he sings this song. Bluebird on My Shoulder.
If you say so. I don't remember anything, but
this seems to be going nowhere.
But you see, the thing is that part of the trailer to me looked as if, you know, he was about to have a nice little song and dance with this bluebird and probably talking about how much he loves Zooey Deschanel or whatever. It just looks...
But isn't that the same as every other Zooey Deschanel movie?
That's not true.
Nearly every Zooey Deschanel movie is a romantic comedy. Every Zooey Deschanel movie...
I didn't say that they weren't romantic comedies, but they don't sing and dance with bluebirds. Okay,
so it's a romantic comedy where they actually sing and dance for once.
But other than that, the way it was put together, it didn't make the movie seem as if it would be very good. The only reason I'm going to watch this movie is because Zooey Deschanel is in it. I love Zooey Deschanel. I think she's a pretty decent actor. I know, damn it. I think she's a pretty decent actress. I think most of her movies that she's been in are great. I mean, clearly there's an exception with The Happening. But other than that, I love them. I think
recently we watched All the Real Girls. What did you think of that?
That one with
Zooey Deschanel. Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Because that wasn't the romantic comedy.
It wasn't. Well, it was a romantic thing, but not comedy. It was more a serious film. And you're right. I thought it was good. She showed that she can actually act as opposed to
a dramatic.
Yeah,
actress.
Yeah, as opposed to just kind of being there as a romantic interest.
Yeah, just so, being cute. And
yeah,
being like indie.
Yeah, and in a sense, that was indie as well. I mean, it was clearly an indie film, but that was a good movie. I liked it, and it only bolsters my opinion of her, and it makes me want to watch this new movie even more. Even though I don't very much like the lead actor. I can't remember his name, but he was originally in 30 Rock from the Sun, or 3rd Rock from the Sun, sorry. And he's in movies like Brick and The Lookout. I didn't much watch Brick, but I watched The Lookout and I didn't like it. And I haven't seen him in anything great since 3rd Rock from the Sun.
Alright, I think this trailer is awesome. As usual, it tells me what I already know. Zooey Deschanel is in it. It's a romantic comedy. I already have read like 3 different reviews for it from Sundance.
Yeah, everybody loves it.
Everybody loves it. It has awesome music in that trailer. I think it's Regina Spektor.
Oh, is it Regina Spektor? I didn't realize that.
I just read an article, I think it was on Slash Film, just went up giving out the track listings for the soundtrack, and there's a Regina Spektor song in there.
Oh, okay.
So right. I'm not sure if that is the song, but it sounded like Regina Spektor. I actually liked the voiceover.
Viewers, email. Let us know how bad the voiceover is.
Just imagine that trailer without it. Like, all you'd be looking at is random pictures and you wouldn't know what the hell the movie's about, really. You wouldn't understand that the movie isn't about Summer this season, but this girl named Summer.
But no, well, what I'm saying, I'm not saying that the voiceover is unnecessary. It is necessary. I'm saying that the person who did it was bad and the person who wrote it was bad. They need voiceover, but they need to do it well, and this one was not done well.
Yeah, I liked it. It kind of gave me a feel that the movie, of how the movie will probably be in. Even though I have to say, I hope it isn't a voiceover for the entire movie, because that
With that voice. That voice would be bad.
I almost went crazy in Vicky Cristina.
Yes!
But that's actually out on DVD now. I think I might want to get that, because I liked it, even though I hate the voiceover.
It was good, but yeah, like you say, I wasn't a big fan of the voiceover.
Right? So I have to say, go watch this movie. If you were one of those lucky sons of bitches who went to Sundance and got to see it, fuck you. If you're one of those lucky sons of bitches who have inside contacts with Fox, please email me.
Get us the screener, please.
If you are from Fox and you're listening, my address is... No, email me at unnamed@gmanreviews.com.
Or even, Andrew, is it what?
Andrew.Robinson@gmanreviews.com. So, alright, we're going to move into our second trailer of the night. We're going to be talking about The Horseman.
I'm Detective Breslin. You got a cause of death? Lateral striated trauma. That's where the pliers slipped.
Are you going to catch the person that did this?
I'm going to try.
Hey, Bres, they found another body.
That's a human.
How'd you get in that thing?
It takes more than one person to do this.
I'm so sorry.
What do you have to be sorry about?
Do you feel expendable yet?
I know you understand what we're doing.
There's going to be more, isn't there? How many more?
When we get out of here, you should go home to your kids.
Dad, you're not around.
After this case, it's all going to be different, I promise.
4 come and sees, 1 in each direction.
Come and see what?
Hey, you should be looking at those.
You have got to be kidding.
Revelation 6, come and see.
It's the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse.
4 horsemen.
for our friends. You're not going to find them.
We're looking for someone with medical training.
We're looking for a medical savant.
These people chose the horsemen as their model for a reason.
You should expect things to get much worse.
They want us to know that they're here.
They've been trying to lead us to something. They're building to something. It's going to happen tomorrow.
Get out of the way!
Somebody help me. Somebody help me. I want to get out of here.
So what did you think of that trailer?
I thought it was clearly a trailer for a movie that is going to be at best average. And, well, I shouldn't really say that. It doesn't look extremely good. It looks like it could be average. It looks like it could be bad. But it does not... Based on this trailer, I would not go to the movie.
Based on this trailer, I would never see this movie.
Oh, thank goodness. You are looking at me with those eyes as if... How dare you say this is a bad trailer?
It reminds me somewhere in between a Mirrors type story flexed with a Dennis Quaid performance from The Day After Tomorrow.
Ooh, that was a bad movie. And Gyllenhaal was in that. Why, Gyllenhaal? Why?
He needed a job. Like, seriously, what was he doing before that movie?
Before that, I don't know.
Let's double check.
He did Donnie Darko before that.
Well,
come on.
Donnie Darko was a cult movie.
True. Also, he probably didn't get paid anything for it. He probably got like 10 grand. That's it. No big deal. But no, what did he do? That's right. Let's check it out. So we've got Jake Gyllenhaal here on IMDb, and let's
all right,
check
let's
it
look.
Out. He was in City Slickers. Oh my goodness.
All right, so what movie were we? Day After Tomorrow. Before that, he had done Moonlight Mile. Don't know it. Highway, don't know it.
I know The Good Girl.
The Good Girl, that sounds familiar. What's The Good Girl?
That's with Jennifer Aniston, where Jake Gyllenhaal is her, like, fling. She's married to somebody, and she has an affair with Jake.
Oh, I haven't actually seen this, but I know about it.
Yeah. People like it, so...
Zoe is in it.
Oh, my goodness, must watch.
Zoe Deschanel is in it.
Must watch.
Lovely and Amazing, I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah, he was in Bubble Boy.
He was the Bubble Boy? Holy shit.
Yes, he was.
Oh, I have to, like, take away all my stripes that I've given to Gyllenhaal. Oh, shit, he was the Bubble Boy.
No, but come on. When you're just making it as an actor, you kind of have to do some crap.
Oh, my goodness. My perception of Jake Gyllenhaal has changed in.
But okay, let's go after, right? So after The Day After Tomorrow, we've got The Man Who Walked Between the Towers. I don't know that one.
He was a narrator, so that probably doesn't count much.
So he's
Brokeback Mountain, which was
amazing.
His more or less breakthrough
movie.
Yeah,
that was it. And then there's Proof, which was pretty decent. I believe that's the one with Russell Crowe and Meg Ryan that
caused Meg Ryan
to leave her husband for Russell Crowe.
I remember actually liking that movie. I don't think a lot of people did, but
yeah, no,
I liked
a lot of people did not, but I thought it was okay.
Jarhead, which was amazing.
Decent. Zodiac, come on, we just finished talking about
it. My favorite Fincher.
Rendition, I just finished watching some of it, and it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was on TV. I saw most of it, not the whole thing.
And then, of course, we have things coming up like Prince of Persia.
Yeah. But then there's Nailed, which didn't that kind of get scrapped?
Well, it says here post-production.
Yeah, IMDb has it as post-production, but I thought because, you know, the director got into so much trouble, he didn't pay the actors. He basically forced James Caan off the set because he was choking wrong.
What?
That's, you didn't know that? So, the story is that James Caan has a very small role, say maybe 2-3 days that he's on the set. And his character, because this is a comedy, or I think it is. If it's a movie, I think it is, right? It's a comedy. And James Caan has a scene where he needs to be choking on something, some, I guess, big piece of food or whatever it is. And the director decided that James Caan needed to breathe in or laugh while choking or something. Some foolishness. Like he decided he had to do something while choking. And James Caan said, no, you can't do that while you're choking, because, you know, you're choking, you can't do anything else, you just choke, and then you die unless somebody does a Heimlich.
You mean kind of like Sam Rockwell?
Kind of like Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
And I don't get that, but you can tell me about it later.
The movie Choke?
Oh, yeah! All right, okay, I get it now. So they got into a big argument, and James Caan walked out. And apparently, it's not the first time. This is the same director that did Three Kings, which I love. I love Three Kings.
I think it's a good movie.
It's better than average. I won't say it's an excellent
Marky Mark.
But yeah, Marky Mark, and he was good in it. Okay? So, suck it.
The only movie he's done is The Departed.
Whatever. But, okay, so apparently he even got into a tussle with George Clooney on that set. So, he's no stranger to controversy on the set.
Interesting. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
I did not know that. But however, we were talking about Horsemen.
That we were. And we were saying how god-awful it
was. Don't watch this movie is all I have to say based on that trailer.
I wouldn't say that, but based on the trailer, I wouldn't watch the movie. I'd wait for it to come out on DVD and then somebody to pay for it and then pay for me to watch it.
I'd wait for the TV to have it and someone pay my cable bill that month. And then, of course, they'd have to tie me down like in Clockwork Orange.
Oh, and they'd open up their eyelids open and eyes, put the eye drops in?
Well, maybe they wouldn't put the eye drops in because they're evil, because they've already done everything else, so they're pretty evil.
But then, you see, it wouldn't be the same, because then it wouldn't make you hate something that you loved. You already hate this movie. So it would have to be something like, you know, they force you to watch Fight Club while listening to Miley Cyrus, and then forever you're scarred by thinking, oh my goodness, anytime I watch Fight Club I'm going to think of Miley Cyrus, I can't watch it anymore.
Well, you just put horrible images into my head, but you know what, as we said, don't watch this movie or wait until more comes out to give us a feel.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to get on to our main review today, and that'll be of City of Ember.
Down to nothing. It sounds like doomsday.
Stations, everybody!
Generator's broke. Can't be fixed. Without it, we won't survive.
I have to find a way out of here.
Exit. Maybe there's a way out of Ember.
Your eyes peeled. Look around every corner. You never know where you might find a clue.
It's too dangerous.
There's a way out. I have proof.
Show me.
We stand united against the darkness. If you have proof, you have to pursue it.
So that was City of Ember, and I have to say that when I saw that trailer, I thought it was going to be great. I thought it was going to be a fun, maybe a little bit dark children's movie, and that I would enjoy it. Then I saw the movie. Not so. This movie was poor. It took them at least an hour just to explain the whole situation, when I actually understood the situation within about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, honest. It was a waste of time.
Uh-huh.
This movie could easily have been 30 minutes long and have done exactly what it did in the 90s.
Yeah, and, I mean, it would have been an okay movie, probably. But, you see, the only thing, another thing that kind of upset me was that it felt to me as if, have you ever played some of those, you know, video games where it's almost like Myst? I think Myst is a name of one of them. Where it's a puzzle game where, you know, you have to do X before you can do Y. And if you do X incorrectly, or if you don't do a third thing properly, then you're not able to move on to the next level. It felt like that to me when they got to the whole end piece of it. And it was just kind of like 15 minutes of sorting out this puzzle, which was very easy to sort out. There was no...
They're children.
I know, but...
They don't know how to sort out puzzles.
Yeah.
If you gave them the 1,000-piece puzzle about the sky, they'd probably get lost after two. They probably wouldn't know to start with edges.
Yes, but come on, man. It takes 15 minutes to get the action part of the movie done. And then, when the action part of the movie finishes, it just ends. They're like, oh, we made it. Done. Fade to black. That's it. It was a huge letdown. I was very disappointed at the ending.
This movie is based on a very famous children's book, apparently. I haven't read it, as everyone would know.
Nor have I, for that matter.
And people were complaining when it came out in October. It didn't come out to theaters here, which pissed us off.
Right.
But I guess it was a good idea since the movie sucked. It just came out on DVD this week, which is why we were so anticipated to watch it.
You were so anticipated to watch it?
Stoked.
Stoked. Stoked sounds better. Anticipated you cannot use in that context. No.
We were so happy. All right, there, it's 2-1. It's 2-1. We're so happy to see this movie. Like, we finally got to see the movie that came from this trailer, which, looked, as Douglas said, looked awesome. And it was a waste. The thing that's good about these kind of movies, right? When you see these movies, how it works is they spend the first 15 to 25 minutes explaining to you where we are, you know? The next 30 minutes is spent giving us the problem. The last 30 minutes is spent adventuring and getting out of the problem. The only problem with the movie is that the entire explanation of where we are and what the problem was given to us within the first 2 minutes of the movie. I mean, not so much where we were, because they still had a lot of exploration of giving us a scenario, a scene of where we are, in that we are underground and... there are pipes and it's dirty and it's dark and they have all these lights on and the generator is going out and all that stuff. I mean, the generator going out, that was given to us from the get-go. As soon as we got into the underground, you saw the lights going out and the people complained. The child even said, that's like the third time this week or something. So you know there's a problem. Right? And then we go into territory of learning where we are and what's going on. And into this world where you pick your job from a hat after going to high school for how many years. And then they spend forever questioning what's going on without any reason to question it. They just sit there and say they want to help the problem. They want to help Ember go on. Right? That's the guy's motive in life. He wanted to become an engineer so he could fix the problem that he thought was there. When eventually they find out that it's not a problem that he can fix, it's something that was supposed to happen. It was supposed to break down after 200 years. Right? And then now we come to the point where they're trying to get out and everyone's against them. And it takes 2 seconds to solve and it's painstakingly annoying to watch. And I think another thing which is retarded, and as I spoke about earlier, the CG is really lame in this movie.
Yeah, it's not that good at all.
I mean, yes, that's nitpicky, but goddamn it, it's horrible. That mole was... Remember there was that mole that came through the pipes?
Yeah, and it had these 10 tongues that came out and tried to lick you.
But that's how mole is supposed to look.
Okay.
So that's fine. It's just that it looked horrible as a CG character.
Yeah.
And then there was the horrid one moment of... that guy from Entourage being the hero because he held open the thing so they could leave.
Oh, I keep forgetting that he's in Entourage. I'm more consider him coming from that Matt Damon movie.
And coming on to Bill Murray.
What?
I didn't like him in the movie. And I don't mean I didn't like his character because he wasn't supposed to like. I mean, I didn't like his acting in the movie.
But
or
the thing about Bill Murray is Bill Murray. He doesn't do much else. So if you ask him to be fat, pompous ass, he's going to be like, okay, I'll just read the lines and say them how I would usually say them. Don't worry about that. I'll just talk. And that's what he does. Even in Steve Zissou, he was this, you know...
But that character fit him more.
Yeah, so maybe what we should say is that his character did not fit Bill Murray. Because Bill Murray doesn't really act as anybody other than Bill Murray. The same thing like Hugh Grant, though I love Hugh Grant. That's because I love his persona and how he puts himself forward. But Hugh Grant really doesn't act as anybody other than Hugh Grant. The same thing with a lot of people. A lot of people complain about that, about Tom Cruise, actually. And I can see it to some extent. However, he tries. For example, in Valkyrie, he tried hard. And he pulled it off pretty well, I think.
Could you think of someone who would be a better casting choice for that role?
For Bill Murray's role?
Yeah.
Maybe Jim Broadbent. Maybe... You don't know who Jim Broadbent is, by the way. Okay, everybody. I'm going to have to let this out because Andrew just whispered to me. He tried to make this not known that he did not realize who Jim Broadbent is.
I'm sure, like, I know him, but I can't remember, like, I can't put a face to the name.
Okay, the person that immediately you are going to realize who he is now. The, I actually might even say it's his biggest role. Zidla.
Give me a, what's the movie?
Moulin Rouge.
Oh.
The ringleader.
Oh, okay, yeah, he is amazing. All right, never mind.
So yes, Jim Broadbent would be a good guy for that role.
How about
I guess.
That guy from Indiana Jones for the
The British guy?
The British guy who's also in the new Harry Potter movie coming up this summer, and he's in other stuff, but I can't remember.
Yeah, he's
right
in
now.
Other things. He's actually, you know what he's in? Your favorite movie, The Departed. His wife, she got trustworthy, Andrew.
We're talking about two different people.
No, the guy in Indiana
Mr. Fringe.
Jones 4, yeah.
No, not him. Not him in Indiana Jones 4.
Oh, not
Jones
him?
4.
Who in Indiana
the,
Jones 4?
The one who was the professor.
The crazy guy.
Yeah.
Okay. He's actually also...
And he's going to be in the new Harry Potter movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was thinking to myself, I didn't know Mr. Fringe was in there. I just kind of let
I'm
that
like,
one
he's
slide.
He's in the Departed. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I guess he could do well. That's true.
Like those two would have been such better choices for that role because they don't force themselves into their own little persona. They actually play the role more, and like, I think they did it just because on top of the children's book bit and the fantasy bit, they wanted another fan base to reach out to, and they had to go for Bill Murray.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, because if I see Bill Murray in a movie, that is a plus. I usually consider it going to that movie if Bill Murray is in it. I love him so much. He is hilarious.
I still say my favorite movie from him is Stripes.
Stripes? I don't know. I don't know if that's my favorite, but it's a good one.
You probably like that one, Groundhog's Day.
I love Groundhog's Day, and you know this. Don't act like, you know, oh, you know what you probably like. You know I love it, because I watched it every
Steve
day.
Steve Tobolowsky is
going to
be on Slash Film again tomorrow.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, you should listen in this time.
Okay. That guy should come on this podcast. You know,
I think we need a little bit more rep first.
Beetle knows Ned.
Oh, yeah. So... I don't think there's much more we can really say. Is there anything else you want to say about this movie?
Not about this movie. I don't know. I guess we could talk about Repo.
By the middle of the 21st century, organ failure had become a worldwide epidemic. But GeneCo was there to satisfy the demand for organ replacements.
Enjoy GeneCo's day and nighttime formula.
The problem is, if you miss a payment, GeneCo sends out the repo man. And when he finds you, your time is up.
Collect on the Handelman account at once. His payment is past due.
Everybody!
It's me she must escape.
I'm only living now.
Yeah, that was another DVD that came out this week.
I just finished watching that not 5 minutes before we started broadcasting.
Because that was the big argument this week as to whether we were going to review Repo or City of Ember. Because none of us wanted to watch Notorious, even though I'm going to watch it tomorrow.
Yeah, I might go and watch it as well. I hope I don't get shot. That would just not make my weekend. That
has that ever happened in Jamaica? Someone getting shot in the theater?
I'm sure it has. I don't know. I've never heard of it happening, but it happens outside the theater. Why not inside, you know?
I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, so...
Repo, the genetic opera. Right. It's an opera, a rock opera,
mm-hmm.
about the near future where they have genetic organs and they have legalized the repossession of these organs for not for deferred what's the word I should use
for non-payment.
Non-payment.
You have to also set the stage where what happened was in the beginning. They kind of just throw you into the scenario very quickly, where they have this almost comic book strip in the beginning, about maybe 2 minutes, where they tell you that there was this outbreak of some sort of disease, or maybe not a disease, but whatever it was. And people's organs just began to fail with a high rate. I think I said that badly, but you know what I mean. People started to need massive surgeries where they needed organs to be put in. They needed replacement organs. And so this company, GeneCo, came about, and they had organs to sell, but they were expensive. And so they had this payment plan, but if you don't pay, you get into problems, because they lobbied this law where they repossess your organs. And so what that is it's not just repossession of your organs. Essentially, it's, you know, legalized murder, because if you go into somebody's belly and take out their heart or their duodenum, they're not going to come out of it
alive.
Well,
you know, from stories going around today, you can do the kidney one and leave them in a tub.
True, but you're assuming they leave them in a tub.
I guess. I watched this movie a couple of days ago, and I was happy. I love this movie. Like, I mean, it isn't the perfect film. It isn't the perfect musical. I love musicals because no matter how cheesy they get, no matter how horrible the acting is, as soon as the song starts, I get in the groove and I get in the mood and I start singing along if I can.
So what you're saying is that you like Clay Aiken.
Hey, what the? How did...
I don't know. He's always struck me as a Broadway type of guy.
Yeah, I do agree. from his times on that show. What's that crappy show again?
American Idol? One of the biggest shows on now? Come on.
No, Top Gear is a bigger show. I hate Clay Aiken. I hate all this music. But getting back to the point. See, you keep just trying to distract me from the point. I love all the music. Not all the music in this movie.
No, yes, there are some.
I have to say, there are three characters who are the best singers in the film and save it.
Completely. The Repo Man, amazing.
The Repo Man, Paul Sorvino. I never knew he could sing. I liked him in this movie, as well as the guy who plays the Grave Robber.
The Grave Robber, yeah, he's almost like the narrator of the movie.
Yeah, but he's just not as prominent to be called a narrator.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Paris Hilton is in this movie.
But she's not bad, though.
She's not horrible, but god damn it. I hate those three children together. Anytime the three of them...
I love that. They were that was so annoying. Good, that's what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be their infighting, you know, their idiosyncrasies, their ridiculous quirks. It was supposed to be about that. And that was... I thought it was great. I mean, when, like, there's one that wears other people's faces for fun.
Alright, that was kind of funny that he wears... I think he's the best out of the three.
Yeah,
because he actually puts on like a character. Rather than the other two, which are
but I like the other guy that was constantly angry.
Constantly killing people.
Yes! I thought that was great. Actually, I enjoyed the movie as well. And actually, I have to say that the Repo Man, I loved his character.
Yeah.
I loved his singing. But there was a point when he was repossessing somebody's organs in some sort of lab or something. And he was singing this song, and I just had to say...
The Thankless Job.
Yeah, that one, The Thankless Job. No, but that song, I just wished... And I know this would never happen, but at that point, I kind of wished that Tom Waits had been the Repo Man.
That's where Tom Waits
and he was singing it. I think that he would have been a great Repo Man, Tom Waits.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely think that song, especially because of the tone that he took with that, with the chorus, with the thankless job. Yeah. It was amazing. Every song, the Repo Man song, was great. As I said, Paul Sorvino as well as the Grave Robber, great. Shiloh, not that great. The girl, she was the girl
From the Spy Kids movies.
She was she and Blind Mag, they were average, but because of the greatness of the other three that I just mentioned, I could forgive it. And then, of course, the three children who I hated.
I love them. Amazingly. Actually, they were one of the highlights of the movie.
They released a clip, and that was a weird thing, that they released a good amount of clips for this movie on the internet in promotion for it.
Yeah.
But everyone out of context looks horrible.
I know. I mean, I remember I saw the clip that I watched, the only one, because after that I said to myself, clearly, I'm not watching this movie. Before I saw the trailer and I saw the posters and I said, this looks good. Then I looked at this clip and I said, no, never mind. It was the one where Blind Mag actually gets into the house with Shiloh. And that was, it looked awful. It looked bad.
There were two clips I saw previous to the movie. It was the first time you see the three children together. Once again, annoying as hell. And they're arguing about who's going to be head of Gene Co. when Paul Sorvino dies.
And honestly, I thought that was a great scene.
Worst song I've ever heard in a musical for a long time. And on top of which, because earlier today I sat down and I watched Victor Victoria, which is an amazing musical. Anyone who likes musicals should go and watch it. Directed by Edward Blake, who did Pink Panther stuff.
It's, do you mean Blake Edwards?
Oh, I'm totally screwing up tonight with more names and with names and shit. Blake Edwards, who did the Pink Panther series, and that was hilarious, right? And the other clip I saw, which again, horrible singing and really horrible to try and get me to watch a movie, was the song 17.
Which song was that?
The one where
she's 17
and she's not a little girl.
And she's in the room and then the man slaps her in the end. Okay.
Yeah. It was like, as I said, Shiloh isn't that good a singer, but I could forgive it because of how good the others were. Maybe if they gave me a song of the three that were actually good singers,
uh-huh,
I would have wanted to watch his movie more.
Yeah, no,
this movie is a B-horror movie turned into an opera.
So if you like B-horror movies and you like operas, then you like this movie? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And you're willing to forgive a couple bad singers.
If you're willing to forgive bad singers in a musical. Okay. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was top-notch. I didn't think it was crap. I thought it was a little bit more than average. It was decent.
I think it's a buy for me. It's a DVD.
Ooh, I don't
I'll
know
buy.
If I'd say that.
It's a DVD that people should buy. If you're the B horror movie kind of guy, if you're the musical kind of person, if you're a Saw fan, because it's produced by the same people who did the Saw sequels, not the original Saw 2, 3, and 4. I don't think it was the same producer for Saw 1. I know you hate Saw, but now you have to, say a little good thing about the guy.
No, I don't. I can say that he made... How many Saw movies did you say he made? Five. He made five bad movies, and one
finally
movie that
got
was,
around to it.
One movie that was a little bit more than average. All right. For you.
We've gone over 2 hours now. I'm going to call it quits here. So, basically, the end result, don't watch City of Embo. Go and watch Repo.
Watch Repo Man, yes.
If you're on the hedges and you don't know any, and you don't want to jump in, rent it.
Exactly.
It's definitely worth a rent. I want the movie.
I don't. I'll watch it again, sure. If you buy it, then I...
Alright, so that's the end of episode 4 of the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
And this is... Not sure who I am today. Maybe Douglas. Not quite
Yeah, that's
sure.
Maybe Douglas. You can hear us live every Saturday night, 8 p.m. on
generally
Ustream.
8 p.m.
Generally 8 p.m. We started really late tonight.
Yes, tonight I think it was 9:15 that we started.
And generally we have more than just us on.
Yeah, I'm sure this episode is going to be one of our weaker episodes.
You can find all episodes on gmanreviews.com as well as any articles I write.
Right.
Hopefully Douglas will write something.
Okay, I will. Though people won't like me for it. It's a movie that a lot of people love.
Yeah, and look out for whatever I have to bring out to the internet. You can find me twitter.com/gmanreviews.
Oh, and I'm at twitter.com/djrlosthisname. That's all one word.
Yeah, so...
Oh, and you can email us at unnamed@gmanreviews or andrew.robinson@gmanreviews or douglas@gmanreviews.
Yeah, and this isn't 100% for sure right now, but I think next week we might have Dave from Screen Geeks on.
Yay!
So tune in for that. Hopefully some Screen Geeks fans... We'll get some Screen Geeks fans.
Yes, we'll bump up our bandwidth, and maybe we'll have... You know, Simon in one chair on my left and Damien in one chair on my right, and we'll have like a proper quorum.
Yeah, that podcast will probably last 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anyways, thanks for tuning in. Leave comments, email us, whatever. Good night.
And me.